America, Washington, D.C., signing on.
When the Santa's hell. And it is 2100 Eastern Time on a Thursday night. You know what that means. The virtual Green Dragon Tavern on the air is live. It is Radio Contra, Sons of Liberty. And it is very good to be with all of you out there. Of course, we're going to be sharing our favorite long pig recipes tonight. That's right. We're going to be talking about Haiti. And what's going on in Haiti, how Haiti hasn't really changed in a very, very long time, really from the beginning of Haiti. We could kind of go into the history of Haiti and exactly what's going on there, why it's kind of always been the way that it is. Well, you know, it's just really not going to get any better. The place has always been full of nepotism and corruption. And when you create a culture around that, well, you traumatize the populace for literally as when it becomes generational to the degree that it has in Haiti, this is the outcome. This is the outcome. Haitian barbecue of a long pig. Or otherwise known as humans, or cannibalism. That's right. We have, in the Western Hemisphere, we have a guy named Barbecue, who is now in charge of Haiti. He's now the head of state. And, you know, I don't know, that must be some sort of achievement to become the president of Haiti. That really, I don't know. You know, anyway, it's a little unsettling, but here's the thing is, first of all, Haiti's always been that way. You know, it has always been an extremely shockingly violent place where there is an entire belief system that has been created there. That has incentivized death, that has worshipped evil, and that's a fact. Okay, that's a fact. This is the mechanism that allows such a high degree of depravity to happen. And where I'm going with this is it may seem shocking to some. I think that it is kind of comical to see how the mainstream media is trying to spin this one. Oh, they're not really cannibals, except that there's literally videos of this. Literally videos of this nonstop of them eating people. They are quite literally eating people. But the point is, behind this, is that for everybody that thinks, oh, that can't happen here. Oh, that, you know, that's just one of those things that'll happen, you know, elsewhere. Won't happen here. Except in, you know, extremely rare circumstances. You know. You know, things like the Donner Party. Gotta say, because Donner, the Donner Pass, to which it's named after them. You know, they're pretty famous cannibals because you got to do what you got to do to survive, right? extremely dire circumstances does that happen, generally speaking, in Western culture, and there's some sort of other psychological thing that's going on with, you know, on an individual level. And those types of stories are disturbing on a fundamental level to us, things like Hannibal Lecter, because they're so rare and because it is such a taboo thing to consume another human being. You know, there's a lot of reasons that we don't do that. Aside from the fact that it's just weird, that it is a problem. It is evil on a fundamental level. Of course, there's a lot of other reasons we don't do that too. Biological reasons and what have you. But point is that for everybody that thinks that can't happen here, well, that level of depravity, this is what you're actually saying. Let me break down the argument for you. That level of depravity is not possible here, is not likely here, won't happen here. That can't happen here. These are things that we see that happen to other people. They happen in other places, anywhere but here. I'm not living in the nightmare. I'm not part of the nightmare. The nightmare is on the screen. I'm eating the popcorn, right? That's how we live. We live in that little bubble. A lot of people live in that little bubble to where these are disturbing things and we may be desensitized to it. And therein lies the point. We might be desensitized to these things, but that level of depravity is not possible. Let me remind you and break you out of that shell that you're in. That it absolutely is. And if you think that these things are not possible, if you think that these things are not likely, they're very, very close. In fact, I think that what we see in Haiti is every bit as likely here, if not more so, and sooner than some people would care to admit. Looking in a mirror. Now, we can say, yeah, but there's a lot of circumstances around Haiti. There's a lot of reasons that Haiti's. Yes, that is true. But what is it that maintains civility in the United States? Why is it that we are civil to one another? At least at face value. Why is that? And once that has been removed, let me remind you of something. As desensitized as the Haitian population is, and as depraved as they are on a generational and cultural level, because that's a fact. That's what enables the absolute viciousness of what we saw and what we have seen during this whole barbecue fiasco, right? This is just another day in the goings on there. But if you think that is isolated to there, the bombardment of our populace of violence in the entertainment industry, violence through pornography, violence through video games, a culture that we have that is extremely and incredibly violent, it dehumanizes us at every turn, to include our children, and is actively working not just to undermine traditional Americanism, but completely devalues it to the point that it has open contempt for those pillars of which make a stable and safe and secure society. And you mean to tell me that won't happen here? Are you serious? Folks, what's happening in Haiti is going to spill over here. Oh, and guess what? Just to the south, anybody here follow Ed Calderon? If you don't, you should. He's seen it up close and personal. A lot of folks that I know down in South Texas, Southern Arizona, down on the border, Southern California. They know all about this. If you think that there is not a similar culture that is very much alive and well and active just to the south of our border, that is very, very active here in the United States, you got another thing coming. If you don't think that these things are going to come to a head and soon, very soon, I got news for you. You better wake up, folks. You better wake up. You better start getting yourself in a better position than you are today for what's coming tomorrow. Now, you can make of that what you will. I'm doing the best that I can on my end to get people as prepared as possible. That's through training. That's through the store. That's through the books that I've written. That's through the hours upon hours of content that I'm putting out. That's some of the projects that I have that are going to be unveiled soon, but not quite yet. We're working on them, but I'm constantly improving my position to give all of you the very best out there. And of course, that begins with the best-selling book, The Gorilla's Guide to the Baofeng Radio. There's a lot of knockoffs out there. There's a lot of con artists out there who are seeking to capitalize on my name, my work, and take money from you, the otherwise great people, unassuming people who maybe don't necessarily know the difference. So when you get on Amazon, there's only one Gorilla's Guide to the Baofeng Radio. There's only one. It's got a woodland camo cover. It is very simple. It is very simple in print. Gorilla's Guide to the Baofeng Radio by NC Scout. All the other books, all the other garbage that's out there is nothing more than cheap ChatGPT clones of my book and my work designed to rip you off and give you nothing in return. And we're moving full steam ahead on doing something about that. But that's another topic for another day. The point is that book being a bestseller has been able to give me the opportunity to help y'all that much more. And that's what we're doing with the store. That's what I do through constant training. That's what I'm doing by literally staying on the road, literally working every single day, sun up to sundown, trying to give our community the very best. Meet me on the 50-yard line, folks. Hell, maybe on the 10-yard line if you can. All right. So anyway, with that said, brushbeater.store, a lot of stuff over there. A lot of people asking more and more about thermal. Got the restock of the Rattlers in today, the clip-on Rattlers, which are in very high demand. Of course, we have the brand new AGM Clarion scopes in 384 and 640. These I'm going to be talking about a lot more. I sold most of the stock that we have on the shelf right now. I've got some more coming in. I wanted kind of the initial rush to be to level out for a little bit before I really start talking about these. But we're going to be I'm going to be doing some videos on them. We're going to be talking about these in more depth because I think the Clarion brings a hell of a lot to the table. Of course, the Rattler clip-ons, we've got all of those back in stock, each model, including, by the way, including the 19-256. So the 256 resolution coming in at just over $1,000. A lot of people have said, hey, you know, look, we want this capability, we want this equipment, but we don't necessarily can't necessarily justify some of the higher price tags that are out there. Hey, I'm listening to you and I'm doing the very best that I can. Now, I'm going to say that if you're one of those sour grapes, why these things cost money? Well, let me tell you something. Put down the cheap beer, quit smoking cigarettes for a little while, start to live within your means, and you will be surprised at how much stuff you can actually afford. Okay, so don't tell me, don't come at me like that. I had to, but let me tell you something. I had to buy this stuff first. okay, to be able to offer it to you. So I don't want to hear it. Okay, I don't want to hear it. I've sunk so much money into just trying to provide these products. So I get really offended when I hear people say that. That's kind of like going to somebody's place of business and complaining because, you know, things aren't free. Let me tell you something. There's a type of person out there who wants free things, and that's a Marxist. Okay, that's a Marxist and a piece of shit. All right. So anyway, with that said, that's anyway, it as y'all can see, you get worked up. I get an email like that at least once a day. Why do things cost money? Why does this cost money? Why does this? Well, you know, either you do it or you can't. Okay. Period. Like, period. So anyway, with that said, good times, great oldies. Brushbeard Eyes store. Get over there. We got a whole lot of stuff to get you better prepared for what is likely to be happening. And anyway, talking about being better prepared, talking about getting training dates up on the counter, talk about another fellow soul who works his ass off for this community. The man, the myth, the legend. The man who has got new training dates, including some that are going to be up here at my place here in North Carolina. Mr. Joe Dolio. What's up, brother?
Hey, man. just actually as you were introducing me, I updated my schedule to include the three classes at your place, two more classes in Oklahoma. We are doing our best. I told people at the beginning of this year that this year you need to focus on training, not buying gear. You should be getting out there and still buy the gear, but you should be getting out there and getting some training and getting out and working with that gear and getting ready for what's going to happen after the election. And so in honor of that commitment, I have really plussed up the schedule with a bunch of classes. Come out and learn field craft, learn community security operations, where we take both of those are based on my books. Fieldcraft's based on book two, and Community Security's based on book three. And let's get out there and train. Let's do some things and learn how we can be a little more prepared for the craziness that is coming. If you want to keep the cannibals out of your neighborhood, come take a class. If you want to go and smoke the cannibals in their camp, come take a Brushbeater Scouting and Recce course. It all ties together in the end. Everyone's training benefits each other. And the best thing you can do is just get out and learn things from a bunch of different people and keep what works for you and find yourself in a better spot than your neighbor and let your neighbor end up on barbecue spit rather than yourself.
Yeah. Barbecue is going to be the running joke tonight.
That's why he has that whole security detail when he's walking down the street, because he looks like he'd be quite tasty on a spit. And he's like, y'all ain't eating me.
Well, we could really go deep into his security detail, the M14s with no iron sights.
Well, listen, I'm going to say this. The FAST team that got deployed there, if they don't smoke that dude walking around in the Marines hoodie just for the fact that he's dishonoring us by wearing it, then I'll be disappointed in my Marine Corps. Somebody needs to smoke that guy.
Well, you might be disappointed.
I know. Oh, for the record, though, for everyone who's listening, French vodka tonight, Gaisson vodka, chilled to about 33 degrees. Outstanding.
Is it good?
Mm-hmm.
The only French vodka I've ever had is Grey Goose. I'm not a vodka guy, so you know it's kind of lost on me, man. But I'll take your word for it. Bring some down. We'll try it.
Well, I'll tell you, the best kind is Putinka, which has got Vladimir Putin's face on it. But you can't buy that anymore because we're a bunch of losers. So.
Man, I've got a couple of bottles of Russian Standard around.
That's pretty back. Good.
I actually have a bottle of Stolichnaya in my hand right now.
Stolichnaya.
Yeah, but see, that's like That's like made by the Russians who live in New Jersey.
I think it's from Latvia, like, but yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Oh, no, this is made in New York. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Stoli's like pretty much an American brand now. It wasn't at one point, but it totally is now. Like,
yeah. And look, Popov is made in Detroit. I mean, Smirnoff is made in Detroit. Oh. That's why it's so nasty. So
yeah, Popov. Popov is the reason that I don't
got that like Flint, vodka. Michigan seasoning.
Ooh, yeah. little lead in the water. Nah, man, Popov. Back in my undergrad days, Popov. When I was a freshman, Popov was like the first. Like that was like the first time that I drank vodka with like mixing it with stuff. It was bad. It was so bad. And that turned me off of vodka for like forever. Just like, nah, man, this ain't my jam, dude. And I've had good vodka too, like Russian Standard and, you know, some of the higher end, you know, Grey Goose and you know, that shit. But nah, this is not my thing. Like, nah. Not my thing. It's just not my type. You know, we all got a type. Yeah, and that's fine, man. Some like brunettes, some like blondes. Some people like booties, some people like titties. It's, is what it is.
Legs.
Anyway, moving down the line, Mr. Johnny Paratrooper. What's up, brother?
What up? Oh, man.
What up?
I am drinking vodka, and yeah, I like vodka.
You too?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. I'm a vodka guy. I have quite a few. I've got a couple different flavors, my friend.
Couple different flavors. Vodka ain't got no flavor. That's why they add stuff to it. It's just rubbing alcohol. Like,
I think that Tito's is pretty good. I got some of that stuff.
I'm just not a fan, man. Of like none of them. You know, that's It's a blue squirrel in the comments said, to quote Ron Swanson, vodka is for rich women on diets. Yes. Rich women and George Jones. George Jones was a huge fan of screwdrivers. As legend had it, would literally drink screwdrivers sun up to sun down. He probably drank totally drank Popov. He said George Jones seemed like a Popov kind of guy. Like, he's got the money for high end liquor, but he ain't spending it. Like, he knows what he's about.
Man, if you run on some rise and shine ethanol like that, I mean certified. That's rough. I've worked with a few people that turned. I knew a few sorority girls, actually. It's funny that Blue Squirrel said that, because I actually knew a few sorority girls that ended up in trouble on the vodka quite a few times.
They all do. They all end up in trouble on vodka at some point. At least in my experience, which, let me tell you, in the undergrad days, that was substantial. So that was, you know. I was totally well entrenched in the Greek life scene back then. I was Kappa Alpha. So yeah, sainted all. But yeah, you know, all the sorority girls get themselves in a little bit of trouble. Blue Squirrel in the comments saying can't do tequila. It's literally the devil's juice. I'll tell you. One thing you need to try if you don't like tequila, and I'm not the biggest tequila guy in the world, but one brand changed my mind on tequila, and I really do enjoy it. And it was my introduction to high-end tequila, because tequila, like my only experience with tequila, like a lot of people, you know, Cuero or, you know, Cuervo, rather, not Cuero, Texas, but Cuervo, Jose, right, which is kind of the Jack Daniels of tequila, you know, or 1800. 1800 is not too terrible. But getting Casamigos, got introduced to Casamigos by a guy locally here who, you know, big Scotch guy. And I'm a big Scotch guy, too. And he brought a bottle of Casamigos over, and it was Reposado, which is, you know, it's rested for a while, meaning it's
Reposado is the way to drink tequila. That's the good stuff.
Yeah. And it's, man, that Casamigos is good. That was, I mean, it had vanilla notes to it. It had, you know, it had some good character to it. If you're coming from the Scotch world or fine whiskey and you drink that, you're going to enjoy it. You're definitely going to enjoy it. Now, they've got their Blanco tequila as well. I like making ranch water with that. It's really good. I mean, and I know, you know, I know who owns it or who came up with, who financed the brand. All right. I know the whole story, man. And whatever. Like, it's fine. Diageo owns it now. So, you know, it's whatever, man. I'm just going to drink what's good. All right. I can really care less about, like, the celebrity-dom behind different drinks or whatever. It don't matter to me. Right. That's not what sold me on it. So, you know, anyway. And it pairs well, by the way. It pairs quite well with barbecue. gotta circle it back. So, talking about Haiti, though, like, you know, Haiti has a long history of being where it is, having, you know, constant turmoil going on there to the degree and poverty to the degree that it has become generational, right? Haiti's a failed state. It's been a failed state pretty much since the beginning. It's never particularly it never got past the partition of the island that led to the Dominican Republic and Haiti on the other side. And I'm going to tell you, there is absolutely zero love lost between the two sides of that island, too. And we're seeing that play out now. Dominican Republic's rounding up Haitians and dumping them off. And they built a wall, by the way. They built a wall right down the line.
It's a big, beautiful wall.
It's a big, beautiful wall. They built that and said, hey, you ain't coming here. Like, we're not playing this game.
They had a little war like 70 years ago. There was like 30,000 casualties.
Yeah.
Well, I was catching up on my Wikipedia, and
you were doing a little academic study.
Hey, it was cited. It was cited.
Work cited. You know. Wikipedia.
but no, but seriously though, they're not friendly to each other. They got a long history.
No. Haitians and Dominicans are like the oil and water, man. Like literally not. It's kind of similar to Tongans and Samoans. Like Tongans and Samoans have a blood feud. Like they absolutely hate one another. And there's a reason for that. Or a pretty damn good one. And, you know, I've seen that play out, but Haitians and Dominicans are very similar to that. Like they absolutely hate one another, but all of the problems there have been generational. And in recent years, the past 30 years, a lot of the problems in Haiti have been caused directly. This is a story you're never going to hear in the mainstream media. They've been caused directly by the Clinton Foundation. Directly. Like, we have evidence of that. So when you think about it, like we're getting into tax time and, you know, everybody's having to do their taxes. And, yeah, if you're actually a capitalist and you made money and you're not looking forward to getting money back, you know, but you're actually part of the capitalist class of people out there. It's part of the economic engine by which the IRS extorts you, because that is exactly what they do to pay for their wars abroad and to give your foreign aid to others who don't deserve it. Anyway, that's literally the IRS's purpose, is to do that. And it also runs blockade for the bankers, too, so that you'll get to a certain place and you won't get any higher than that. They create a glass ceiling. But anyway, with that said, point is, where I'm going with this is, so yeah, I got to thinking about the IRS and kind of lost my train of thought a little bit. where I'm going with this is that they are inviting these things in, right? They're inviting this evil in, but we had been exporting that abroad for a significant amount of time. The Clinton Foundation was funneling money into Haiti, because when we think about how, like, you know, offshore bank accounts and, you know, the Cayman Islands and Switzerland and, you know, Wolf of Wall Street, how you have, you know, you're like hiding money back and forth, all that stuff, right? Nobody ever thinks of Haiti. Nobody ever thinks of, you know, a country that is in complete turmoil and is absolutely a basket case in terms of stability, right? We don't really think about that, because you're like, oh man, no, you and I would look at a place like that and say, man, I ain't putting my money there. There ain't no way in hell I'm gonna put my money there. That's scary. Like, yeah, you know, there's no guarantees. But if you're part of the category of people who can quite literally manufacture wars to get what you want, then that is exactly where you would put money. That is exactly where you would launder your money. That's exactly where you would take the money that you have extorted from others, and you're going to put it there. Especially if you're involved in the human trafficking aspect as well. And that is exactly what has happened in Haiti for at least the past 30 years. Joe, help me out here. I think it was 1994, was it not, when Papa Doc and Aristide and the incursion into Haiti? You were part of that, weren't you?
Aristide. It was in 98. I was afterward as a contractor there. Papa Doc was done in 71, but Aristide was he was still in charge in 98, 99. when the 82nd Airborne painted their faces like skulls to scare the Haitians. Yes.
Ooh. I mean, honestly, if you know, looking at it as a Haitian, like, that don't scare me. You know, I'd welcome them. Like, hey, you know, these guys rolling in and whittling camo.
They're probably going to hand out MREs, and soccer balls. Yeah. I'm like, you want to be friends with those guys? Tell us where the bad guys are, kids. Tell us where they.
Yeah. Like, look, man. You know, barbecue down the road is going to eat me. Like, literally eat me. These guys might give me medicine. You know, who are you going to talk to? I think that decision is pretty easy. But point is that back at least 30 years, right? At least 30 years time frame. Haiti has been the center of literal money laundering, of dark money, and budgets that have been completely off the books. That's where that money is gone. And that's the reason that they continue to keep Haiti in such a perpetual state of chaos. And I think, this is just my hot take here, that's the reason that the former head of state of Haiti fled the government, because he replaced a guy who was in fact elected through a popular election and immediately began institutional reforms and started to turn the country around. And then they got rid of him. They removed him from office and reinstalled a Clinton-friendly regime. And now that regime is the one that just left. So it's going to be interesting to see how this whole thing breaks down. My prediction is that they're trying to make friends with this barbecue guy, and hope that, you know, hey, we're going to keep this ball rolling, the money laundering rolling, as long as we can, this criminal operation that's also tied in with human trafficking. I mean, that's part and parcel of it. This is exactly a place. Who is going in there to monitor this stuff? Who is going to go in there? Who is going to go into Haiti? I mean, you know, you're not going to get Amnesty International in there. You're not going to get Interpol in there. You know, and if you keep a place in perpetual state of chaos, I'll submit one more thing to you about this. Look at Libya. Libya is another really good example of this strategy in practice. When you go into a place that was stable, Gaddafi had Libya stable, right? They had a decent standard of living, you know, wasn't necessarily a high standard of living, but it was a decent standard of living. And, you know, as we all know now, why did they remove him from power? Why did they do that? His own people, there was a contingent of people in Libya who were unhappy with Gaddafi and wanted him overthrown, right? You're always going to have that. You're always going to have that segment of the populace who don't like you no matter what you do. But there were a lot of people who were really happy with Gaddafi too, right? A significant number of them. It was only until he proposed returning OPEC to gold standard. And they had a traditional style Bedouin meeting. This is all documented. It's exactly what he did. This is why whenever he'd go to the UN and he'd give a speech, the mainstream media would always play the same video clip of him in his traditional Berber Bedouin style outfit that he's up there, you know, and he's got his royal purple and white and gold and everything on. He's giving a speech. They would always say the same thing. Oh, he's Gaddafi, the crazy man Gaddafi is giving a long-winded, irrational speech to the UN today. It was crazy. But they never tell you what he said. They never give you a transcript of the points that he actually made. And the easiest way to discredit someone in the eyes of the populace is to simply just say, well, they're crazy. And you never give them the chance to come up with an alternative. You never do that. Right? Say you never did with him. Well, they overthrew him. Why'd they overthrow him? Because, as I said, he wanted to return to the gold standard. Ooh, we can't have that. Uh-oh, you're going to upset the apple cart. This is why you had Hillary Clinton. You did not have Barack Obama doing this because he was just a placeholder. That's all those people say, oh, well, Obama is the one that's really running. No, Obama is an actor. Okay, he's a placeholder. He was a community organizer that played his part quite well in Chicago and then Illinois and then working into the national scene. He played his part quite well. And they groomed him. But make no mistake, had they not had him, they would have had somebody else. Right? It's the same people, right? String pullers. And so when Hillary Clinton, this is the reason that Hillary Clinton, as the Secretary of State, could continue to wield her influence across the world, it's exactly what she did. This is why she was the one that was prosecuting that war. She was the one who went on national TV and said, we came, we saw, he died. Right? Who was she talking to? She wasn't talking to you and I. She was talking to her friends at British Petroleum. She was talking to her friends at Big Oil. That's exactly what that was all about. That was the Rothschilds. That was the Rockefellers. They said, you're not going to challenge us. You're not going to challenge our authority. And by the way, we're going to keep Libya in a constant state of turmoil, because when there is a constant state of turmoil, there is no authority to challenge us on anything. You can't even get in there. You don't even know what kind of criminal stuff is going on there because you can't even get into the country. How can you have people cooking the, or how can you have people auditing the books while we're cooking the books if you can't even have access to the books? That's exactly what they've done. That is what they're doing in Haiti. That is what we've seen unfold. That's what they're going to continue to do. That's what was going on in Ukraine, by the way, as well. And they're getting called on it. What say y'all?
I mean, Haiti is, you're right. Haiti has always been a place to launder money as long as the Haitians get their cut off the top. That's where, that's why you see a lot of reconstruction work that was never done. They're so busy ripping off the reconstruction companies that the work never got done and the money all went to the right people. I mean, it's one of those places. And you're absolutely right on Gaddafi. The man actually made a lot of sense when you listened to what he had to say. And that's why they killed him. So, I don't know. Where does Haiti fit in the rest of this worldwide play that we're seeing? I envision China being able to swoop in here and get a strategic base that close, because the world's eventually going to say we can't let it go on. And the Kenyans backed out yesterday. So
yeah.
There is a void there.
Yeah. They said, hold on, now that the guy has resigned, we don't have a legal government, to support. So, China has secretly become the largest provider of military police forces to the United Nations. And that's how they leverage their way in. They come in with their military police to restore order, which in fact, Hungary signed a contract with them today to do, of all places. And then they say, well, listen, while we're here, why don't we build you a new port, build you a new airport? And then all of a sudden they own the country. So that's my main concern in all of this.
Yeah. We see that's an important point about Kenya and Haiti. And I was not aware. I've had an extremely busy day, but that the Kenyan contingency backing out.
Yeah.
I knew that had they went in there, that was going to be an absolute nightmare. They
didn't have enough guys to even do force pro. I mean,
well, one, they didn't have a way to get there. We were going to have to fly them there. And two, if you look at this from the perspective of the Haitians, they would have just viewed the Kenyans as another gang. They wouldn't have seen them as legitimate in any way.
No,
this is an unfortunate piece of third world life. They look for the Europeans or the Americans, the white folks, to come and solve the situation. Look at Rwanda. They didn't want help from the African Union in Kenya. They said, where are the Belgians and the French? And it's the same thing that happens in the Caribbean. Where are the Brits? Where are the Americans? And that's really the only
The French and the Spanish should kind of clean this up a little bit. Bahamas is pretty.
That became Haiti. That's how Haiti became Haiti. It was French. The French got kicked out.
rather eaten and burned, barbecued. And
yes.
Pretty much.
Literally.
Yeah.
Literally how it happened.
Like, so, as bad as it could get,
But no, I didn't know that the Kenyans had backed out. I'm actually I'm thankful for those poor Kenyan troops that were tapped to go there. Now, there's some other things that are going on with it. There's another dynamic, when you think about it, why Kenya? Eric Prince has had a big presence in Kenya for a long time now. So there's that aspect too. Take that at face value.
Could you even secure the airport in Haiti with 1,000 dudes? I don't think so. I mean, you're running guards. Like, that'd be 300 people per shift. I mean, that's not even enough to secure the airport.
No, 1,000 people a brigade is not enough.
Maybe for like a week.
I mean, you could seize the airport in a day and there'd be like total chaos, but if they started probing you just don't have enough guys, like one QRF maneuver and you're out of fucking reinforcements.
Right. Well, and the thing is like, there were definitely some of those guys rolling around with Generalissimo Barbecue. His real name escapes me. It's just Barbecue. But there definitely were some guys that were rolling around with him that did know what they were doing. I mean, we saw the cats with the M14s with no sights on them. Some of those, but there were definitely some pipe hitters in there with them that knew what they were
doing. In Haiti? Yeah, some of those dudes looked squared away.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
you know, it's
there's a large Haitian population in a couple areas in Maryland, and they're actually pretty nice. They have like some cultural things where they like don't hold a door for you, but I think that's more of like a French thing where like the Brits, you would hold a door for somebody.
You know, I was listening to hear if one of the dudes in that video said something about a sand table, but I didn't hear any of them.
So they speak at this like weird blended language, which would make any infiltration operations pretty difficult.
It is. There's a lot of local slang that goes with it.
Yeah, they like mumble. I mean, they speak like mumble Creole. It's like a blend of French and Spanish and English and like some slang. It's quite the language. Right. And I'm from Baltimore. Like, I'm trying my hardest to keep up. Like, theirs is pretty complex linguistically.
It's just like English, you know. If you take somebody from Britain, you know, there's a way that we speak here in America. There's the broadcasting speech that, you know, that dialect that we have that I'm using right now, right? That we're all kind of we're enunciating things and we're kind of speaking clearly, trying to at least. You know, we all have our little accents and stuff, right? But when we get back around people that are native to our area, you know, where we grew up, it's going to come out. Like the native way that we speak is going to come out. And, you know, you take somebody from Britain and you start listening to them when they're around a bunch of other British people, they can be real hard to understand. You know, so it's kind of the same deal. You know, local dialects is a thing, but anyway, moving down the line because we've got Madman Actual popping in here. Good evening, sir.
Evening. How are you?
I am well. I see that your torture testing of the minimalist chest rig from Wendigo Works.
Yeah, that thing's kind of a tank. I posted 100% that picture American made. Yeah, I posted a picture. I was hanging on a tree, like, you know, it's a little baby tree. But I'm like 200 pounds, and I was like hanging on it and like kind of swinging around, and those buckles held. I don't know how.
They're solid, man.
That's like the world's strongest plastic buckle.
It's solid.
But yeah, I mean, it's a nice little rig. I like it.
It is. It's, I mean, it's great for low profile stuff. It's great for, you know, women who are jogging, men who are jogging. Like, you know, it's got so many other purposes in mind for it other than the tactical ones. Yeah, you know, it's a very, the reality is that a lot of the tactical gear that we buy is kind of a limited use item. You know, like there's just not a ton of things that we're going to be doing with it on a day-to-day basis. But, you know, a rig like that, you actually can.
I can take that into the tree stand with me and not have to fumble around with a backpack, you know, just like a water bottle in my pocket and then Yeah, like that replaces like pretty much my whole bag, which is a giant pain in the ass when you have a tree stand on your back.
Right.
So
index yeah, everything.
It's definitely a multi-purpose thing. That's why I got two of them. I got one to look cool, and then one to actually like, you know, be a normal guy with.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's nice. So, yeah, freaking barbecuing, huh?
That was barbecue. Wild. Share with us your favorite long pig barbecue seasoning.
Oh man,
Old Bay.
That's hilarious.
I was gonna comment that on the one where the dude is chewing the guy's
Old Bay
extremity off.
Oh, is there like video of this going around? I got rid of my Twitter account.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, there's a video of a man like trying to bite the tip of another man's penis off. It's kind of grotesque.
Oh man. And the first thing that comes to your mind is Old Bay, huh?
Well, it was more of a joke. At first I was disgusted, and then I was like, well, I'm gonna do it. Any good soldier does and turn a disgusting situation into a joke.
No. I mean, yeah, that's, yep. That's what you do.
I mean, what else are you going to do?
Man, that's wild, though. So so the party's lit in Haiti, huh? So when's the 80 Deuce going to seize the airport there?
Probably not anytime soon.
No, it'll be like Grenada or something. Or you know, I don't know. Just Cause, yeah. No, it's.
So I don't think they're going to send anybody in there. The difference, though, the difference, like 1998, so Joe's, it was 1998. I was wrong when I said it was.
I'm about to urgent fury this party.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But those weren't election years. And that's a critical, like, all right, 98 was an election year, but it wasn't a presidential election year, right? It was a midterm election. So. You know, this is presidential election year. So, like, let's say, you know, they send the Marines in. Or they send the Deuce in to seize the airport, like, you know, Urgent Fury style, Panama. And next thing you know, you have a Bagram airfield type situation. And worst case scenario, you know, some paratrooper is, like, there's footage on TikTok of, you know, some paratrooper's leg getting chewed off by barbecue and the boys. Like, that would be a complete disaster. And one that politically...
Voodoo Mike and the boys. That's crazy.
Yeah. It's... The Biden administration can't deal with that. The whole fiasco
So if there was contact, they wouldn't want to explain why the Marines fired off 3,000 rounds and there's like 1,200 people on the ground. Well,
yeah, like, and that's the other side of the coin too, is the political ramifications of getting into a firefight. Like, because the, you know, that's...
Did you see the video of the aid that Israel handed out? It was almost like they did that on purpose just to show everybody why they don't hand out aid. Like,
man,
maybe draw out some EMF and take contact. It's almost like recon by fire when you hand out aid. Yeah. I'm sorry, it's a tactic though. It works.
No, it is. I mean, that's like giving a rabid dog some water. You know, like, how'd you think that was going to turn out? You know, that's now the Palestinian supporters in the audience are gonna turn on me. Oh well, don't light yourselves on fire, boys.
Historically, Haiti is where Smedley Butler wrote the Small Wars Manual, because from 1917 to 1934, the U.S. Marines ran that island.
Mm-hmm. So, they did.
So we have a very long history of having to do this with these people. Oh, and let's see. Why did they invade in 1917? Because there was a prime minister that the gangs wanted to throw out, and he stepped down, and unrest ensued.
Yeah, and everybody's investments were pretty much useless down there.
Yeah, it's like... pretty much the same situation as we have now.
Well, all war is indeed a racket. And this is why Mark Milley went to work where he went to work. He's got a nice cushy job. Nice. Nice cushion. So, you know, he's nice and comfy.
So the Haitians also invented, I mean, they are not amateurs at guerrilla warfare. They've actually been going strong for about 200 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they kicked some serious ass. They're not dumb. I don't know why people put out those IQ statistics on the island. I mean, that's obviously like, I mean, they've literally just annihilated entire armies. Like it's,
well,
like they weren't even so trying.
Here's the other problem.
A dumb person can't achieve that. I mean, it's just like,
Here's the other problem with saying like the median IQ there is, I think it was 67 is what they were saying. Where did they test these people? Like where did you get your sample size and how did you get that?
Can't possibly be
source.
True.
I made it up.
Yeah, exactly. That's when that those types of statistics get bantered around. I'm like, I mean, I'm not sitting there and saying like, you know, it's an island full of geniuses that is just, you know, untapped. Nah, but you know, I got a hard time believing that, like, you know, every your aggregate level IQ there is sub, you know, what we would call mentally handicapped, and what, you know, our standard for being mentally handicapped in the United States. Like, I just have a hard time believing that, because I know how many, and here's why, I know how many stupid ass people we have in the United States. Dumb, just stupid as shit. And they have, I mean, how do you graduate from high school? There were people who graduate from high school that are functionally illiterate. How do you graduate from high school? You're functionally illiterate.
Pretty much every Haitian I've met speaks almost three languages. I can't believe these statistics. Like, there's no way it's true.
You mean to tell me that in Haiti, now, poverty, and that's the thing, is that institutional poverty, when you have institutional poverty, people get used to living a particular way, right? And they're not going to build complex structures. This is the other thing. It's, oh, well, you know, they live in a bunch of shacks. Like, look, man, if you know that a hurricane is literally going to blow everything away, you're not going to build complex structures. You're not even going to bother with it. When your basic needs, your basic quality of life is not even being met. Like, you're just not going to do that. You know, and so poverty, people get used to living a particular way when they're impoverished. I mean, you know, I grew up seeing this stuff, still see it now. That's just that, you know, it's like, all right, whatever. And no matter what socioeconomic status you achieve beyond that, you're still going to live a particular way. You're still going to dress a particular way. You're still going to live a particular way. You're still going to be, you know, like this, I'm true to my roots. You know, like that, that's what that means. Now, I'm not saying, like, you know, we're dealing in Haiti, you know, best and brightest. They're just missing. No, like, don't get me wrong. What I'm saying is that, you know, they're not any worse off than some of the shittiest areas in the United States. You know, like, we've got some. We don't need to be casting stones at people when here in the United States, we've got some of the dumbest people who walk the earth. Like, and that's a fact. That's a fact. I mean, we have the.
What do you think about Risky? What do you think Risky Crispy thinks about the crispy Haitian?
I see him in the comments.
Kentucky Fried Haitian? I mean,
I see him in the comments. But, that's, you know, to my larger point, what I was making at the beginning of the show, when you have a generationally based traumatization on the social level, when you have that over and over again, you no longer have those aversions to taboos like consuming another human being. Like, it's one thing to kill another human being. It's another to eat. Like that's and they're not even doing it. Like I'll take it a step further. So in Africa, for example, like in the Congo, when the Simba revolution was occurring, it's a story that I'm sure some people in the audience are familiar with. When all that stuff was going on, when those things were happening, you had a certain contingent of the Simbas who were cannibals. Now, they didn't consume people like, hey, I'm gonna barbecue your leg. What they were doing was consuming the heart of their enemies. And it was a symbol, an outward symbol of I've conquered you and I'm taking your soul, right? So that's like ritualistic cannibalism. There's a ritual behind it. There's a purpose behind it. What they were doing in Haiti is just, I'm just going to eat you. Like, I'm gonna break off a piece of your leg.
So, you know, question. And this is a serious question. The Deuce did go to Haiti. I think 2nd or 4th Brigade went after earthquake. 2nd Brigade. Yep. They went after the earthquake. We have good relations in Haiti. Why are we letting it get out of control? Just because of the money laundering?
Money laundering. Disaster. If you keep a place in perpetual chaos, you can control everything else that's going on. The chaos is sideshow. That's what they're doing. I mean, the people that are pulling the strings here, man, the Clintons, the other people that are behind the Clintons, whatever the fuck was going on with Epstein, these people, those are the pure evil ones. I mean, what you're seeing, like, it's scary. I'll take it a step further, man. So, you know, I'll put on this tinfoil hat real quick. So, you know, we know how Crispy Commie, right? Remember Crispy Commie a few weeks ago? A lot of y'all done forgot about him already. Air Force kid.
Yeah.
Lit himself on fire. Free Palestine, all shit.
Yeah.
Right? Y'all remember
him? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Roman candle.
You know how Twitter, a lot of people were sharing that on Twitter, myself included. They locked my account for a little bit, say, you got to take this down, right? They did that with all those people. What did they do? Did they do that with the Haiti stuff? I didn't share any of those videos. I saw a couple, and that was enough for me. I didn't watch them. I wasn't sitting there like, ooh. Yeah, I was just like, oh, man. Did that really just, nah, I can't. Because I'm not, I've seen enough of that in my life. I don't need to see that. And you know, I pray for all the souls that are involved in that. But my point here is did they take any of that down? Did they do the same thing? Because that is so, in my mind, they're both awful. Okay, they're both awful. But an act of self-immolation is a couple of degrees of separation away from watching a couple of
armed choice. Dudes.
Yeah, a couple of armed dudes who just killed this guy, and they got him burning over an open pit, right? And they're eating him. Yeah. Walking around with dudes' legs tied around their neck.
Yeah, well, let me make a public service announcement about this. Y'all do not need to tag me and Matt and Madman and Patriot Man and this. You don't need to tag us. We saw it, all right? You don't need to keep showing us these images, right? We're aware of it. Man, people just felt like tagging me and everything. Yeah, I'm like,
I saw 35 separate videos of a guy grabbing the calf off a cooked leg and eating it. Yeah. So I saw my piece.
My point here is that why did they not take that stuff down? Why did the censors allow that stuff to go through when the guy who self-immolated, they were scrambling like, oh, we gotta take that video down. Why were they doing
conditioning?
That? Why did they do it? Because conditioning. They wanted you to see it. They wanted you to see that. They wanted you to see it. They want you desensitized to it on one hand. But on another hand, they want you to see that because it is the distraction from everything else that's going on.
Yeah.
You see that, you're scared all of a sudden. Oh, shit. You know, look at that. Right? That's a diversion. They don't want us talking about how the Clintons have run everything on that island. They don't want you talking about that. They don't want you talking about the money laundering. They don't want you to talk about the human trafficking that's happened there. They don't want you to know how they've kept that place in perpetual state of anarchy so that they can continue doing the crooked, evil shit that they've been doing.
But
that's why they do that.
Here's an interesting point to level. So I was talking with a bunch of guys who are not as tuned in on Twitter and whatnot, had heard some stories, but are not really seeing the stuff. And I was like, yeah, this is what's going on. And they're like, well, I don't believe it. Like, oh, there's videos online. I really don't want to show you. No, I want to see it. No, bro, you really don't. Like, I'm the guy who grew up on Live Leak. Like, you really don't want to see this. I want to see it. Well, I started to try to pull it up on the couple Twitter accounts that I knew had it, and it was all gone. So I was like, oh, obviously Twitter wiped it, right? Eventually. Now, this is, to your point, this is about 24 to 36 hours after they first aired, right? Mr. I'm a Flaming Torch Dude was gone within, what, 6 hours, 8 hours? This was up for a whole 36 and gone.
Like 8 at the most.
And what was interesting, though, was there was a CBS report. And you want to talk about, like, I don't know how to phrase it, but except, like, flexing your power because you own the platform. There was a CBS article that came up that, like, quote had a quote, and it was like, oh, well, some right-wing people are saying they're cannibals. And Elon tweeted, was like, well, what do you call this? And tweeted the video that if anyone saw it, I'm just going to start the scene. There's a dude laying on the ground, the dude standing above him, and he bends down and go from there. And it was the video that would have gotten banned in about 17 seconds, right, on Twitter. Rightfully so. But Elon almost left it up to a point being like, no, you're saying this is not happening. This is actually happening. And that was the only post that I saw of all of those horrific scenes out of Haiti that survived. And I guess he left it alive just to prove a point to the CBS reporter to say it. But, I mean, they were stepped up a day and a half. I mean, like I said, Mr. Flair dude was like, I saw the video, would refresh, it was gone. So to your point, it 100% is all perception on that one. They wanted you to see it.
They need to. Yeah. In Iraq, we were running operations to open mental institutions and pretty much put the people that needed to be there in them. And I think we need to, you know, get together with some other countries and be like, look, we need to arrest like all the schizophrenics and stuff. They're like barbecuing people in the streets. Like, you know, I mean, like, what the fuck, dude? Like, I mean,
I've got another solution. It's just not that hard.
Well, yeah, I mean, but keep that on the DL and just keep writing, you know, the reports that like, yeah, there were troops in contact. Like, yep. You know, like, and just, that's it. Just like one sentence. Yep. Troops took contact 11:37.
I mean, listen, if you're willing to eat another
nothing
human
further
being,
to report, like, no, just keep rehab. Writing. I just want to just X nothing further to report. Nothing else follows. You know, put your X's on the paperwork. I think they need to really do it like dirty a little bit and teach some like young Marines and young paratroopers how the world really works. Like,
well, I don't know. I feel like, but yeah. Jolly, actually, I'll let you speak first. I know you were trying to talk, and then I'll give my thought. Duh, you had a thought.
No, I was just going to say that there's literally no rehab for someone who's willing to eat another human being. So no. I don't think you can put him in a hospital and expect some sort of a change. You just,
yeah, I mean, the whole Wendigo thing.
The Wendigo.
That's the whole Wendigo thing. You don't like. That's where that comes from. A Wendigo is not a catchy, trendy image that you're seeing out there, or an awesome book written by Clay Martin. You know, it's it literally is the legend of a cannibal. Like, you know, it's a cannibal becomes a Wendigo, and it has an insatiable hunger for human flesh. That's what it is, you know. And so, like, you ain't gonna grow deer antlers or something, but nah, just like you said, man, you ain't coming back from that. Like, you don't. And when you think about it too, you know, cartels do this. This is part of a cartel ritual. It goes back to the Aztecs, by the way. You know, that being all part of it, it's an indoctrination, and it is the most heinous form of indoctrination, because once you've convinced the guy to do that, he'll do anything for you. You know, that's like the old, I guess, the ultimate loyalty test. It's not something that, you know, but it again, it's an uncomfortable topic to talk about, but it is that pure desensitization to violence, which also speaks to what I was saying about they wanted you to see that. And at some point in time, there was a decision that was made behind closed doors in one way or another. They wanted you to see that. All right. Desensitization and all of that. But, you know, if, again, I go back to what I said at the beginning of the show. If you think that we're not going to see something on, you know, that level of depravity in the United States when all of this stuff starts to spin out, and man, I just think we're really kind of getting close to the edge of the event horizon here,
Scott,
in a lot of ways. Yeah,
I have a question for you then. So I feel like that's a double-edged sword, right? So allowing those images to, you know, this is in the paradigm of the unsecured southern border and the conversation around that. And then you have this pop off in Haiti. And so, right, there's two schools of thought. There's one is suppress everything about what's going on in Haiti and let the Haitians come over, or let the general public know what's going on in Haiti and maybe see what their level of tolerance is of letting people in. And so my question is there's an argument to be, yeah, we're going to desensitize the people to this, but also we got to get these people in first. So they have to import the Haitians before they can be like, by the way, they came from a country who did this. So I don't really know how to frame the question, but like, how do you reconcile that where they simultaneously need to get people in for their quote unquote world end view, but also need us to be terrified enough of these people to allow them in? That's what I'm trying to reconcile, because I agree with you that, like, yeah, that was left up for a reason. But also, how do we, like, how do they justify the American people? They're like, okay, then, like, we posted on APLD about, oh, U.S. Coast Guard is not going to stop Haitians from coming in. They're going to follow the boats in, right? It's DeSantis in Florida who's like, no, they're not coming aboard. So how do we reconcile that? I don't really know.
Yeah, I don't have a solid answer for that. But what I will say is, first of all, my position is, no, you don't need to come here. You fix your country. You don't need to come to mine. You need to stay where you are. You know, look, and that's the thing, like the foreign aid and all, we don't need to be giving these people more money. But why are they giving them money? Why is there, you know, a $7 million contract? I shared this earlier, $7 million contract. Or for vehicles to go to Haiti. Ain't no vehicles going to Haiti. I got plenty of vehicles in Haiti. What are you talking about? $7 million. You know what that $7 million is? It's money laundering. That's what that is. And when they bring these people over, this is a convenient excuse to bring over replacement Democrat voters. This is why you had Mayor Adams. You had Mayor Adams saying, you know, I can't even imitate him. I was gonna try, but I can't. He might have a 70 IQ. He might be one of those that has a 70 IQ. But point is, we call New York City the Port-au-Prince of the United States. Who? Like, literally never. I don't think anybody has ever said that. And what the fuck? What kind of statement even is
that? And look, if they did, it was not a compliment. They didn't make e-names.
Right? No, no. This is not a compliment at all. What in the hell is this dude talking about? But the reason he said that was what he was actually saying was we're gonna bring in all these Haitians. Well, you know, my reply to that was, if you already have a problem, all right, New York City's got a severe problem, severe, to the point that they're frivolously doing this, using the National Guard to quote unquote secure the subway. You're putting them, you know, you're going to be putting the uniform National Guard in there, which is unsustainable. This is a completely unsustainable thing that they're doing. But you're going to do that, right? You're going to do that. You've already taken your crime problem that is being caused by Venezuelans, Chileans, right? These are the two that keep popping up in the news, right? There's a lot more. And now you're going to throw Haitians in the mix, a group of people who don't get along with anybody. Like, that's just the way that it is. Haitians, they don't jive with anybody. That's, you know, and anybody that's dealt with Haitians knows this. You know, they're cool people. I worked with two that I called friends and really good dudes. But they have their own culture, and they are very xenophobic to anybody that's outside of Haitian culture, right? There's a lot of severe violence that goes along with that. And when you're inviting in people, I mean, everybody, like down in South Florida, everybody knows that Haitian gangs are extremely violent. Like that's an extremely violent group of people. Well, now you're inviting in all these people who have an even higher degree of desensitization to violence. You're inviting them in. And you already have created the general strain to the degree that you're overloading the system. And now you're going to invite in something that's even worse. It makes absolutely no sense. And Eric Adams is doing this, by the way, because he's being told to do. This is what he's being told to do. You know, this is what they do. This is what, you know, hey, this is a script you're going to follow. This is what you're going to do. This is how you're going to do it. And that's that. You know, and so it's something. But buckle up, because this thing is going to get, it's going to get scary in a hurry. And we're only seeing the beginning of this. Any thoughts?
I think a good segue would be a discussion on like what it takes to defend something, because look at the subways, like New York City. I mean, realistically, how would you think 1,000 soldiers or Kenyans or be able to lock down the New York City subway? I mean, what? Like, no, I think you'd need like a hell of a lot more than 1,000 people. You know, like what are there like people just like, yeah. How many soldiers are there walking around?
Well, think about how many police officers you would need to police the city of Port-au-Prince. It's multiples of 1,000, right?
Oh, for sure. So
you're just there's that, it's not enough.
Well, you know who does have a huge surplus male population?
China?
I don't know the name of the place, but friend. I heard they speak Chinese.
And it's very interesting that China has been doing a lend lease with their law enforcement. who are also spies, who are also subversive agents, cultural subversion agents, right? They're inviting him into different places. That's a really good segue into talking about and making sense of this move between Viktor Orban of Hungary, who has kind of been celebrated in a lot of conservative circles. Oh, yeah, Orban. Orban.
Yeah, this Orban. Makes zero sense, bro. I know what you're about to say. This makes no sense. Go ahead.
Yeah, he has invited in a very comfortable relationship with the Chinese and inviting in Chinese law enforcement in an exchange program. And this is one that, to be fair, took me by surprise on one level. I think that it is Orban essentially saying to the world that China is going to be the new economic leader and we want to do business with them. And that's what's being said, along with I'm thumbing my nose at the US-led NATO. We're kind of done with doing business with you. That's what I get out of this. What do y'all think?
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous. I think it's a win for China. It gets them inside NATO in the wire. And in all honesty, there should be some sort of back channel. Hey, man, you just can't do this and remain in NATO. But China's playing the long game way better than we are, and they're winning. They're building a new port in Peru. They're just slowly on that march, man.
Very much so. Very much so. Belt and Road continues. Johnny, you were one of the first people on the show to talk about Belt and Road, too.
Yes, sir.
What do you take?
Well, let's see. You know, the Bahamas is, I don't know, 3,000 islands. China could assist, like, Haiti maybe becoming, like, a Bahamas member or something. They kind of want to be their own independent country, though. I don't know if that would fly. The French don't really want anything to do with them. They're not really on good terms, truthfully. They kind of stopped being friends after the whole marrying off all the white women and hanging all their husbands in front of them. And then setting them on fire, and then showing the British and the French who's boss on their island. They really just wiped the floor with, like, I think like 12 divisions. I mean, they just annihilated the other team. The Haitians are really good soldiers. I don't know. I don't know if China would send soldiers in there, because it's not like Djibouti or Somalia, where I think they would be a little submissive and a little like cutthroat, kind of like Arab, like the Arab influence in Somalia is different than the Spanish, Christian, French, Catholic roots. So I actually think we could probably go in there and be, that would be like a good chance for us to make China look stupid, because I think we would be more successful than China ever could be on this one. But Cuba's right there. I mean, it's a stone's throw away, so it'd be a good little flex, and they'd have an excuse to be bringing lots and lots of shiploads into the Caribbean, which you can hide a lot of stuff under a ship. You can put a lot of stuff in a ship. Maybe there could be blockades, and it could end up like the Cuban Missile Crisis. Like that ain't medical aid, and those aren't hospital ships. Like, those are K-Club carriers. Like, you know, like, I mean, the K, what's that missile called? The
Club K.
Club K. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which, they're absolutely doing that. The thing is that who's going to be checking all that out? Like, you know, if the Coast Guard is busy escorting, bringing, you know, basically human trafficking here, bringing people into the United States who proved over and over again that they weren't capable of running their own country. Who's checking out these vessels? And so, yeah, it's a perfect opportunity for China to expand their footprint. Although I do think that they're probably looking to expand their footprint in the Dominican Republic. I know for a fact that China has a lot of influence there. And why even bother with Haiti?
Yeah.
Why even get your people involved unless here's the catch here. You want to get your guys some experience at the organizational level.
And maybe get some of that blackmail for the where the Dems and the Repubs might be hiding their money or something. I don't know. What do you think? What, like,
well, I think they already got that.
Do you think they already? I think
they got that long ago. And
yeah, they downloaded it from the Tesla computer before. Well, too soon.
That begs the question of the elite capture that's gone on in the United States completely unabated. The White House.
Hey, y'all know Teslas have cameras, and there ain't no footage of that. Like, yikes.
Yeah, they got cameras all over.
It records everything that goes near it. Like,
yeah,
it's a Tesla. No, where's Chevrolet, the video of her backing into the water? She ain't backing in the water, man.
Oh, I see what you did there. I say, it took me a minute to see where you were going with that one.
They already got all the data they need. Okay, so they wouldn't go there for a little blackmail. It would be an international flex, really. I mean, but man, they got Cuba right there. I mean, it would just be expensive.
It's a risky flex.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
Because they could just as easily go in there and look really, really dumb. Because, like, all the places that they have influence over with their Belt and Road, they just build ports. And then when the work's done, it's like they just leave their guys there. They just leave the workers there. And that's why we have, like, all these Chinamen coming over. Because they're like, oh, well, there's nothing going on in South America anymore because we already built everything that they want to build. So, all right.
They do love their railroads, don't they?
So, yeah, I mean, China might go in. I don't know. I think, Johnny, I agree with you. I think, well.
That's a high risk off. If they sent the wrong unit in, they could really get made look stupid. If they sent the wrong unit in.
Well, if anybody sends the wrong unit in.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like, God, you could send CJ Sodaf in there and, like, they might look dumb. All it takes is one guy doing one wrong thing and then the whole team's wiped out. I mean, it happened in, it wasn't that long ago. It was in Africa when that whole team of Green Berets got smoked.
Kenya. Yeah.
Was that in Kenya?
Was.
Yeah, didn't I mean, they, like, it, you know, it's the best of the best get.
Yeah, a grenade got tossed in front of them, or the axle broke by accident or something. They broke
they broke down and then they got stuck and then they just got swarmed. Mm. But, like, I mean, it's Haiti, dude. It's like God, I mean, just from the footage, like, dude, I wouldn't want to be rolling around in there. It looks like a fucking nightmare. There's just trash everywhere. Can't there's confirm. Cannibals wandering
around. You don't
want
to be rolling around on the roads there.
Yeah, it's like, God, that's just a terrible spot to try to do anything. Which, that's why, Scout, I'm kind of with you. Like, man.
I think we should position some HIMARS and point them at Cuba and really calm things down.
Cuba would look at that like, you didn't shoot all your HIMARS off in Ukraine?
Just slap some ATACMS in there and be like, hey, Cuba, fuck you. 290 kilometers of range.
And I mean, bringing up Cuba, that's interesting because it ties into all of this. So I have a friend and a contact, a very good friend, who recently went to Cuba on a mission trip, a Christian mission trip. And he brought back a lot of valuable information that was collected firsthand. And a lot of it was centered around the degree of influence that China literally has. the equipment that they have, that they're fielding, you know, and this is what I've long said. I did, you know, the overlays on it, drew it all up, you know, hey, here's where the airfields are. This is exactly what they're doing. Or, you know, they're using Venezuela as the China is certainly the beachhead, but that's kind of the gateway into the United States. Venezuela was the first part of all of that. And now they're expanding. You know, you have Guyana here, which Venezuela is going to open up a front going into Guyana. That's going to happen. It's absolutely going to happen. They want that larger stake. They're just not ready necessarily to do it yet. They haven't been cleared hot by both the Russians and the Chinese, who have a vested interest in this happening. When they do that, they're going to control a large swath of the world's oil futures, and they're going to remove that from, or attempt to at least, this is their strategy, to remove that from Western control, Western-centric control, specifically ExxonMobil. That's who they're trying to pull that from. That's what it's all about. That's what Burisma was about, specifically. It was isolating that control and wresting that control into Western hands to get it away from Gazprom and the oil futures in Ukraine away from Gazprom. That was the scheme of maneuver. That's what it was all about. Among other things, there was certainly other things that were going on, but economically, that was the game that was being played. So China is absolutely part and parcel of this. They're ankle deep in it and waist deep in it, I guess, would probably be a little bit better. I was trying not to say something else deep in it. But anyway... Point is, I cracked myself up there. Point is that, you know, they're providing a lot of equipment. TBR-119s is one of the big ones. All the police checkpoints that were observed were using TBR-119s. In case you don't know what a TBR-119 is, Tango Bravo Romeo 119. It is a military radio that is produced in China. I do stock them in the store, by the way, in brushbeater.store. I got my hands on a significant quantity of them, and for reasons, training reasons. It's also a really neat radio. Like, it does HF, it does UHF, VHF. It's a really cool piece of equipment, very durably built piece of equipment. But it's just interesting that this is what they're using. This is what they're standardizing on across the board. So, you know, it's China is certainly expanding their influence. But I think when it comes to Haiti, they're just looking at that like, you know, we're just going to leave that one alone. Because as you pointed out, man, I think that if they go in there, they could look real dumb real quick. And, you know, they certainly don't want to do that. The only reason I would see that they would go in there is just to get experience at the organizational level for what they are planning to do next, their next anticipated move. And it's interesting that they are structuring so much around policing.
Scout, I have a thought. Like, maybe in response to the TikTok, they would occupy Haiti, and that could be like a point counter, like a world stage move. Be a little bit of good practice.
They don't care much about TikTok.
You don't think they care? You don't think the Chinese care?
No. I mean, not in like big picture. TikTok's an influence campaign. It's whatever. They'll stand up something else. They don't care. Yeah, if TikTok goes away tomorrow, they'll stand up something else. I mean,
aren't there like almost a billion users? I mean, that's a lot of data, man.
It goes somewhere else. There were a lot of people using MySpace at one point.
That's true. That's true.
Whatever. Yeah, they'll go somewhere else.
Yeah, Vine was popular at one point.
If it goes away, I don't think it will. I don't think TikTok's going. That was just a political move. Now, does this does it mean that government's not desperately trying to control narratives? Yeah, they absolutely are. They absolutely are. But I don't think TikTok's going away. Like, that's, you know, they may end up selling
to like Google or they're gonna Disney. Sell, they're going to sell it to Disney.
they're not going to sell it to Google. No,
it's Google. Yeah, yeah. Google, maybe Amazon. There's a lot of companies that could buy it.
If you don't think that the U.S. intelligence community is also using TikTok for intelligence, that's not going anywhere. It might get divested into some shadow companies, but 100% it's going to exist.
Yeah, I mean, anybody downstream can intercept with a man in the middle. And since your since it's running over your ISPs, I mean, they can scrape that for sure.
Google is balls deep with the CCP as well. They're going to sell to somebody. What they'll do is they'll stand up another company out of nowhere, right? Comes up out of nowhere, just pops some other new company, just pops up out of nowhere. Shell Corporation, run by an American. Oh, an American cutout puppet, right? And they'll sell it to them. That's all it is. Nothing more, nothing less. You know, and operations will resume. Like that's it. I don't even think that's going to happen, though. So, but anyway, that's a whole other conversation. Chinese aren't TikTok. The whole TikTok situation is an annoyance to them, at best, and it's political talking points. That's all. It's literally all it is. And so the Republicans can pat themselves on the back and say, we did something for national security, right? So that the neocons can say, we expanded government, right? And so that the liberals can get their talking points in there too, right? So, yeah, we did something. We showed those evil people. See, we're nationalists too. Don't you think that's interesting? How the left became hyper-nationalist? Flying all their flags when all the things happen. Anyways, I don't know. I'm not.
I can look up in the sky and see the big signal that says virtue.
Virtue, my virtue. Anyway, all of a sudden the left becomes nationalists. It's But anyway. Talking Guyana, we talked, you know, obviously at length, the Haitian barbecue throwdown edition. What's up with exactly 33 minutes left on the 33 minutes and 30 seconds left on the clock? I'm going to talk a little bit about firearms training, AR-15s specifically, where you should zero your AR. I saw a bunch of banter going back and forth on the interwebs before coming on. Was skimming to see if there was anything new and relevant popping up. I don't even know why this is a conversation. It's proven science. Like it's trajectory. This is trigonometry. And so I'm going to interject my two cents and then turn it over to y'all. I taught a whole lot of people how to shoot. Over a long career of not just on the civilian side, which is where I am now, but in the military as well. I taught a lot of people how to shoot. And, you know, when you're talking about zeroing, what you're doing is the actual art of zeroing a weapon is to... First, obviously, you know, you're mating a point of aim to a point of impact, and you're also zeroing to an average of trajectories to maximize your lethality at a specific range, right? To take advantage of both the rise and fall of that particular round from that weapon. And I like getting people lethal to 450. There's a couple of reasons for that. There's several reasons for that, but there's a couple of reasons on my end in the scout course when I run it here in North Carolina for that. One is range limitation. That's how far I've got. is 450 meters. The other part of that is that once you get past 500 with a 556, you're really losing a serious amount of energy. And that's across all the rounds. Now, I'm not saying that you can't make a lethal hit with 556 past 500 meters. That's not what I'm saying at all. But it has lost so much energy at that point. And I can't account for what weapons people bring to class. There's absolutely zero way I can account for that. Now, I'll tell you, on average, people bring a 16-inch gun with an LPVO on top. Most often it is either a Vortex Strike Eagle or a Primary Arms optic. That's just what people are running. You know, I do see some Night Forces coming to class. You know, I've got a Night Force NX8. The Swamp Foxes are super nice. We've got those in the store. The Lucids are super nice as well. You know, got all these offer them. But just on average, this is what I'm seeing people bring. And, you know, they typically will have a 1-in-7 or a 1-in-8 twist, and they're typically running 55 grain ammo on average. That's what people have got. Okay. You might have something completely different than that. You might have something better than that. You might have, like, you know, whatever. I don't care. This is what I'm telling you. This is what people in your working environment actually have. All right. So when zeroing a weapon, regardless of optic, regardless of, you know, like BDC, bullet drop compensators, and whatever reticle you've got and all shit, right? Like, let's take that out of the equation for a minute. Let's just say, you know, our bullets travel on a parabolic path, except for 6.5 Creedmoor, apparently, is a laser beam. But anyway, they travel in a parabolic path, all right? They have a rise, they have a fall, and what we want to be able to do is to have that average of the rise and fall hit on a human-sized target or man-sized target, IPSC target, right, based on law of averages, you know, belt line to the top of the head at the maximum amount of distance possible, right? And 450 is about the limit where, you know, you've got, whether that's 55 grain, 62 grain, or up to 77 grain, 556, and, you know, since we're going to talk 7.62 by 51, that trajectory is about the same for 147 grain M80 ball, right? So they're going to be about the same. If you have a 25 meter zero, 36 yard zero, center of mass, at 100 meters, and we do this repeatedly in class, is why we do the 100 meter drill, you're going to be shooting them anywhere from 2.5 inches high to, if, and again, it depends a lot on your barrel and the barrel twist and things that I have absolutely zero control over, right? You probably don't either, because when most people buy their AR-15s, they don't look into the minutia of the details, right? Unless you're just like that in tune to it. And if you are, that's probably not your first AR-15. Okay, well, let's just be honest. So you're hitting somewhere between like the solar plexus and the chin, all right? Once you get to 450 meters, you're hitting somewhere between the belly button and the belt buckle, right? So like that belt line right there, that's where you're going to be hitting. That's putting all your rounds, as long as you've done your part, your fundamentals are solid, right? Everything's good. As long as you've done your part, you're going to be good to go. People get hung up in all the minutiae. They don't necessarily, like, they interject all these ancillary things that don't really make you a better shooter, right? Bullet drop compensators and optic don't make you a better shooter. You getting trigger time and understanding the trajectory of your round makes you a better shooter. Bullet drop compensators are simply a law of averages, all right, that somebody else computed, and they're just telling you, hey, trust me, bro. So. Point is, getting into that, 25 meter zero, unless you are running some optic that says do something different. But even then, still zero at 25 meters and see where your rounds are hitting, getting out to 450 or further if you can, and do your own data table, do your own dope, all right, data on previous engagement, and that's going to serve you very, very well. 25 meters zero, 36 yards zero, see where you're at. That's where that's going to be. There really doesn't need to be a ton of discussion on that from my end. That's just my training methodology. And again, we do that in the scout course. You zero in fighting carbine tube, but I'm more concerned about your gross motor manipulation in that class. Scout course is day one, all about your marksmanship capabilities. Anyway, with that said, guys, went a little bit long on that one. Your feedback, your thoughts.
I hate that argument. The whole which zero is the best. Because if you look at every single one of them, if you aim center mass, you're hitting them somewhere out to about 400.
It's all minute a man.
Like, it just, the people that are like, well, no, like, it's this one's better. It's like, bro, if you get shot in the dick, the chest, or the face with a 5.56 and you're within 400 meters, you're not having a good day. That said, I like the 25 meter zero because, I don't know, it just makes more sense.
That is hilarious. I'm like dying over here.
It's true, though. Like, everybody's like, well, no, I do the 100 meter zero. And it's like, bro, we're not trying to get the 10 shot. We're just trying to hit. It drives me fucking nuts. I can't stand it. It makes me so angry.
Yeah. For me, 100 meters is just what primary arms is what that's what it's designed at. And for me, that makes the most sense. But to your point, 25 meters, 0, 50, 100, you know, we get in this minutia. At some point, all you're aiming is minute a man. And you're like, hey, man, can I put a round, can I neutralize this target at 450 yards or meters, whatever you want to say? Guess what? It takes one round. So if you're confident you can hit an A zone on a human sized target at 450 meters with whatever zero you have that you're comfortable with, to me, it's like, guess what? You've done your job.
Yeah. Like I said, I just prefer the 25 meters zero mostly because that's what I learned on, but also it just makes sense. Like, the closer they are, the lower you aim. The further they are, the higher you aim. Like, it just, you know what I mean?
Blast.
Just logically makes
sense. My 2 cents.
The other zeros, you're like bouncing back and forth.
My 2 cents on it is I have a, I got a 16 inch clone of an M4. And I mean, I got the rear backup iron sight and the fixed front sight, and it's got the front sight post on it and everything. And it's like, man, you can confirm zero with your red dot if you take a hard fall. And I mean, whatever you use, LPVO, whatever, they're all pretty reliable and fantastic. But that 25 meter zero, though, it's like, if you got to do a snapshot and somebody's right in front of you, where it really counts, like, because you don't want them to start spraying in your general direction, that could end very poorly. But then, like, if you're just like walking around, like, you can, like, if you got a 25 meter zero, if you're pointing it at the other guy and just popping a few steady rounds while kind of making sure it's aimed in his direction, he's going to know you're shooting at him, for one. And two, it's going to be like an accurate, like, volume of fire. Like, it's going to be a consistent, steady headed in his direction. And then, like, once you get down towards the ground, though, and then you can really, like, think about it with the 25 meter zero. If you practice on a 25 meter 300 target at 25 meters, what you're looking at is a man at 300, but you're zeroing at 25, essentially. And so you're practicing a long range shot with good feedback on your trigger control and your breathing and your position. And so you can do more than just test like how accurate your weapon is, but rather you could staple like 15 25 300 meter targets to a couple of cardboard boxes at 25 meters. and you and your buddies can get down in the prone and be like, all right, five rounds each, you know, 15 targets. Let's just like hammer them. See, like, and let's just go for like speed, but accuracy, like, you know, and you can, I mean, you could, you and your buddy could take like a whole squad out in like 3 or 4 seconds. I mean, if you practice and you got the right optics and you guys know what you're doing, red dots, you can stack the dots, LPVOs, you got your BDCs. You know, I like the snowman on the red dot, cause you got a good night sight with a red dot, but that's just one man's opinion. You know, run whatever you gun, but I also like the holographics for the same reason. You always have a night sight. But a good one too. But yeah, Ed, that's just my two cents. I'm all about that 25-300 and then warming up with the boys at 25-300 on some paper galleries. And then, you know, if you got some steals, bang some steel at 100, 300, 200, 500, whatever, you know, got a 300 Win Mag, dust it off, try to put a group on something's head at five, you know, try it out. But yeah. Yep. What say you, Dolio?
Other thoughts, Mr. Dolio?
No, I agree. Everyone wants to do all this crazy math, and they're like, well, like, I do my AR at 25 and my AK at 50 and my FN FAL is at 32.5.
What a headache.
It's like, dude, just come up with one. Be consistent, and you're going to be good enough for what we're talking about. I yep. get it. You're not going to win any competitions. You're not going to win anything. But I have never once had someone decide the outcome of combat on a split time, right? So, and look, if I hit you center mass or if I hit you in the gut, either way, I have effectively rendered you combat ineffective, and that's all that matters. So,
yeah
25 is good enough.
Yeah, I have an M14, right, sitting right here with a red dot on it. I mean, it's 0-25 for MA.
Talk about blasphemy, man.
It's I know. Gosh, imagine, like, God forbid, you know, you use a battle rifle like a battle rifle.
That gun fucks, regular actually.
Optical. Oh, it works so good.
I love that gun.
It's amazing. It's slappy slaps.
Every time I go to Johnny's, I caress it while he's not looking.
That's probably why all these.
I bet you caress the M14, right? Yeah, that's what I'm hearing.
Look, he just said it. Oh, we're just going to leave it alone. We're don't ask, don't tell around here.
Yeah, that's right.
What is this, 2008?
It is, no, though.
For real. Like, to go back to the, like, in, I think in everybody's head, it makes more sense with the 25-300. That the closer you are, the lower you aim. The further they are, the higher you aim, right? Because I'm looking at some of these other ones, and it's like, it's kind of doing the bouncy back and forth thing. And like, it's just too much shit to remember. You know? Or am I just retarded?
Yeah, no, you're right.
No.
Because I don't remember which one it was, but I was looking at it. I was like, oh my God, that's like, what?
Some of these new, like, blended, like the EOTech Voodoo, I haven't looked down one of those yet. I think those are pretty neat in that, like, style where it's like a red dot and then, like, you got a Christmas tree scope. But I've never used one, so I don't know how I would zero something like that or employ it. I'm not in, what, like, Wyoming. Where I'm running a 6.5 Creedmoor, either
you do it the same way,
pretty much the same way.
Yeah, you do the same thing. I mean, it's the Voodoo is just kind of.
Have you had one in class? What do you? And if so, what do you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's they're all kind of variations of the same thing. I mean, you know, if you're already familiar with the Horus reticle. This is one of the really nice things about the Swamp Fox, by the way, the Warhorse 1-6 that we've got in the store, because it actually has all of that functionality built into it. So the advantage of having the I have them in either MOAs or mills. The nice thing about that is, and you know,
had a whole conversation about that with Ryan Kleckner, and like I've got my thoughts on MOAs versus Mills and all that. Long story short, like MOAs is probably a better way to go if you're brand new at this, because Mills 3.5 inches at 100 essentially is 1 mil, right? It's a little bit more than that, but 3.5 makes the math a little bit easier to do in your head. The thing is that with MOAs, it's every inch. So it's an inch at 100 yards. And for civilians, that's typically how they're going to think a little bit. It makes it a little bit more effective than thinking of everything and having to learn, you know, what mils are out at a range and everything. But all of that aside, like, here's the thing. It doesn't matter whether you read mils or you read MOAs. The reticle itself, which is, you know, they're all variations of the Horus reticle. The Horus reticle is kind of the first one to do this. They're all based around holdovers. So it'll tell you, like, when you're looking through it, when you're self-spotting, because, like, you know, the whole shooter-ready, spotter-ready, like, That's all good and well, like if you're in your traditional final firing position and everything. But for most guys, like most of the time, bro, you're spotting for yourself. Like, you know, hopefully you can see where your rounds went. And this is why you don't want to overdo it with magnification on an optic. But having that 1-6, you know, you're definitely not going to do that. You know, I think that's why the 1-6 is so popular over like the 1-8 or the 1-10 or whatever. It's there's a lot of reasons. But anyway, that Christmas tree reticle that's under there, whether it's MOAs or mils, doesn't really matter that much for this application, because you're going to see where your round went, where it splashed, and then you're going to know, okay, all right, I need to hold this many units up and this many units to the left or right in order to make an impact. And so it's really intuitive to use. I mean, it's almost stupid simple. You don't really need to get worked around the axle of, like, you know, it's MOAs or it's mils or whatever, because with, like, between here and 450 meters away, you know, I'm going to see where my round impacts. Like, I'm going to see where it went. And so I'll know if I zeroed at 25, I'm going to be in the ballpark, right? Seen it every single class, every single scout course I've taught. I've seen this over and over and over again. This is, you know, it works. It's proven science. And you can take somebody who literally has zero experience on an AR-15 or, you know, whatever other rifle, carbine, fighting weapons platform they've got, and you can put that weapon in their hands with that optic, as intuitive as it is to use, and you can get them to 450 meters in a day.
I've seen it a dozen times, easy.
Yeah, everybody does this, right? I get everybody to do this. I have an extremely low failure rate. The only people who fail to achieve that are the ones that are just like, yeah, no, I can't do this. Yeah, we do it with AKs, believe it or not. Oh man, is it a little difficult? Yeah, it's a little more difficult with the AK, but it can be done. Absolutely can be done. You know, do it with the ARs, do it with all the other weapons platforms that people come to class with, you know, but typically speaking, that's what I was talking about with that AR-15 setup. That's pretty much what people bring. That's pretty much what people have. And in 2024, that is talking about things at the macro level, like, you know, neighborhood protection team kind of thing, like Jack Lawson and all that, you know. What are people likely to have? Because, like, we all have our little vision of, like, you know, I've got this rifle, like these rifles over here to neighborhood handout or whatever. Like, all right,
Scout, yeah. Have you noticed in Ukraine? It's like every time I see footage, it's either like an LPVO or a red dot. It's kind of funny,
yeah.
Or some. It's interesting how. It's like people, you know, they kind of pick what they're good with, and then they seem confident enough to run into the trenches with one or the other. Like, it's, yeah. I mean, Godspeed to him, man. I mean, run what you got. You know?
Like, it's 2024. Optics are a thing. Optics are an advantage. You know, put it on your weapon. There's no reason. There's literally no reason not to have an optic on a fighting rifle.
I have 20 years of batteries for one of my optics.
I saw.
Yeah.
And it's only like a handful of batteries. So just.
I try not to watch too much of this, but I did dive into some recent Ukraine footage, and I checked the comments to make sure it wasn't repeat footage being passed off as new. And because there are some dudes that are pretty good with that stuff, and you can kind of learn how to filter it out. But anyway, these guys, they were clearing trenches with red dots and just like hosing down like 15 rounds. Like one guy gets half the mag, the next guy gets half the mag. You know, you pull back, and then it's another guy's turn to risk his life while you reload, and then he does his thing, and then it's your turn to risk your life. And the Ukrainians are fighting. I'm seeing what they're doing. Like they're doing this. Like, all right, your turn, my turn, your turn, my turn. And they're taking those turns in those zigzag trenches. They're building. I mean, the war is like, there's definitely like a fighting style to Ukraine now.
Yeah.
Like it's interesting how it's the little minute, the micro tactics for the Ukraine theater are pretty interesting.
They are. So it's going to be a good topic for another episode because it is last call for alcohol. We are closing down for the evening, but it's been really good to have all of you on here for this edition of Radio Contra Sons of Liberty Live. Rushbeater.store. Get over there. We got all the things. Everything is currently back in stock. So with all of that said, God bless. Take care, and I will talk to you again very, very soon. Cincy Scout.